So this is an exciting passage. A lot happens here. Jesus calls his closest follower Satan and tells him to, you know, get behind so he can overcome him. Not something we see that often here. I think we need to start with what it is Jesus is predicting. Jesus is predicting, apparently, his defeat on earth. He is predicting that he will be run out of the temples, that he will not be able to make the kingdom himself, and that he will rise from the dead. Now, we're not entirely sure what Peter's objecting to here. We can see a number of things. One is Peter might be objecting to the idea that Jesus is going to leave them. That's a plausible thing that he is rejecting. He might be rejecting the idea that those who follow Jesus may also suffer Jesus' fate, death by the Roman occupation. He could be saying, no, we will be accepted by these power structures in this country, in this land. That will be okay. He could be saying, no, Jesus is not committing heresies by saying he will be resurrected from the dead. We're not really sure what it is that he's correcting in Jesus's tale. But what we do know, first of all, is the method of Jesus's death, the gruesome crucifixion, not fun, right? This cross is a sign of suffering. There's no way to get around that, or at least it was in first century Roman occupation, right? Another commentator I read said, these were the Roman billboards showing what happens when you defy the power of Rome. Very persuasive. You know, we know that Jesus was crucified on top of a big hill. Why was he crucified on top of a big hill? You can see it from far away. So these are the billboards that people have challenged the authority of Rome and see what happens to them. And in so many ways, that sign that you have succumbed to the power that you challenged, that you have transgressed against civil occupation, comes with shame at who you are. We hear this time and again from people who have been in jail. There is shame associated with it. We hear this again and again from people who have found themselves on the outs of society. If you go, and even people who have to use food pantries find themselves ashamed because it is a sign that they have failed in some way in their own minds. And so that cross was a sign of shame that you have not lived up to things. It is a sign of all that Jesus has said, that you will not be favored by the chief priests and the scribes, just as I have not been. You will not find yourself on what appears to be the side of power or the winning side. People will try to use your weakness against you and make you feel shame for who you are. And this cross is the ultimate sign of that. So if you feel shame for following me, if you feel shame for being with me against all of these people, be warned. A lot of us have problems with that next line, that I will be ashamed of you. Maybe it is just rhetoric. Maybe it is reminding them that their shame is not something that they need to hold with them. I'm not really sure it's a problem. But what I do know is that he speaks to us, because the nature of shame so frequently is that it is secret, that we are afraid of admitting something. Do you know what I'm talking about? How many of you have felt shame before? Right? Now, shame is different from guilt, right? Guilt is this idea that you should be doing something different, right? So guilt is something that you can usually do something about. It's a nice motivating factor, as many of our co-religionists understand. Shame, on the other hand, is not productive, because shame is about maybe who you are or what you've done, but it's not something that you can do something about. It's there. It's about you. It is about something over which you feel you have no power, right? Guilt is power. Guilt is knowing that we can do something else. Shame is feeling helpless about it. Does anyone watch the TV show The Americans? It's This is so hard. We watch like two TV shows, and this is one of them. It's a popular show. It actually is. A lot of people say it's a really good show. It's one of the FX shows. It's about a couple of Russian spies living in Washington, D.C. Deep cover agents. They look like Americans. And also their antagonist across the street, an FBI agent. And in a recent episode, this time last year, because we actually watch this on streaming because we don't have cable, so we're a year behind all of our friends. There is a great scene where Beeman, the FBI agent, is interviewing people who work on stealth technology. And he's talking about the KGB. And he's saying, what is it? What is the secret you have? What are you deeply afraid of? What are you deeply embarrassed by? Because that is what the KGB will use on you. And if you tell me now, they will have no power over you. There will be no leverage. What is your fear if everyone already knows what you are ashamed of? Secrets and lies are what give those corrosive influences power. Because the people, of course, the people who believed in global communism did not need shame to motivate them to spy on their compatriots. No, it's people who were coerced and blackmailed that we're trying to deal with here. And when for so long you saw this was why gay people were thought to be security risks for so much of the Cold War, because the idea was we could tell all your friends that you're gay, right? And now they can't do that, you know, at least not in a lot of places. So that secret shame is what evil can use, or however you want to describe it. You know, I call evil the sort of the things that corrode our own souls, right? The processes that get inside and make us less than who we wish to be. And it is through the secrets of shame. It is through the secrets that we carry with us, believing that no one could possibly understand or forgive us afterwards, that lead us to be less than we would like to be. When so often, I mean, how many of you had a deep shame that you've had to admit to someone? Something that you have done that you're ashamed of, something that you thought you could not tell anyone. Anyone? This is a tough question, you don't have to answer. I have. For those of you, we can answer this in our heads. Was telling someone as bad as you imagined it would be? No. Not generally. Sometimes it is, and those are special cases. But this is what we're getting back to with taking up the cross. Jesus is saying, here is a symbol of shame. A symbol that is thrust upon you, that is in public for all to see at the end. You can take it up early. You can choose to let people know that you are a follower of Jesus, that you oppose this power, that you are someone who thinks that they are wrong. You can be that person. You can do things that might embarrass your family. And you can do it in public. And you can do it to remove the power that you give to others to shame you. You can embrace the thing you think you ought not to be ashamed of. In this case, following Jesus. Yes, it's embarrassing to your friends and to your family when you're up with this guy who is being chased out of town. But if it is something that you believe, if it is something that you pursue out of the hermeneutic of love, believing that this is how we can show love to one another in the world, you can take up your own cross, your own burden, your own sign of shame, and share it with those around you and say, no, this shame has no power over me. I am a loved child of God. I am a loved child of God. I am a whole person. I may acknowledge what is true about me, acknowledge what I have done, acknowledge who I am, and God will love me still. So when we read this and we say, get behind me, Satan, know that that Peter's message is the message of secrecy, is the message of embarrassment, and Jesus's is the message of the world around us, the message of truth, the message of transcendence, to say we do not need secrets. We do not need to hide who we are. We will find love from God above and in the community of our brothers and sisters. So take up your own cross. Amen.